Arya slid her dagger out and drew it across his throat, as smooth as summer silk. His blood covered her hands in a hot gush, and he tried to shout, but there was blood in his mouth as well. "Valar Morghulis," she whispered, as he died. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we decided it was time to rebrand and relaunch just in time for the game to do the same with its second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. Be sure to check www.whitebookpodcast.com for more content, generally in written form. Huge thanks go out to George R.R. Martin for creating this world, FFG for a great game, all of our contributors, and you, the listeners. Contact us on this site, facebook.com, as well as Twitter, or email contact@whitebookpodcast.com. This Creative Commons music is Townfish by Spinners.
Seriously, one of my favorite quotes in the whole thing.
Yeah, that's really freaking good.
Intense.
That's who she is, man. Stone Cold Killer.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Wow, that makes me want to talk about the TV show, but I think we should save that for props and slops.
Yep, definitely. We don't want to start spoiling people in the first, 2 minutes of the episode.
Yeah.
That's okay. We can talk about the plot.
Oh, we do. Well, you know what we should spoil for folks within the first 2 minutes?
Who we are.
Yes, man, Tommy is on it tonight. Why don't you do that for us, Tommy?
So we've got myself, Tommy, who's in the eye of the hurricane right now. pretty serious storms going on here in Chicago. And then we've got Big Roy in New York City. Say hey, Roy.
Ahoy, hoy.
Ahoy, hoy.
And then our staunch and loyal host, Will. Stay hey.
Howdy.
There we go. Intro is done.
Woo, man.
Woo! Efficiency when you don't have the man who shall not be named in the episode.
Daryl?
You know, Daryl, yes. No, but everyone, Daryl, you know, Daryl has a name, right?
He does.
And when you speak it... It
brings favorite great joy, Daryl. Right?
Yeah.
Community troll X.
My God. Dead air.
All right, yeah. Fellow to Harris.
Fellow to Harris.
We'll trim most of the dead air.
We are here to serve your needs for Valar Morghulis analysis. Here we go.
Here we go.
Yeah.
I was going to ask if we wanted to do... a Missouri tournament report, but that was slid. Did you do that? Did you do one, Will?
No, the awkward timing of episode 250 kind of precluded that, unfortunately. So, yeah, we never actually did.
But we can do that real quick and say, "Hey, Will, congratulations for second place in that. That was baller."
Yeah, thanks. Will, you did. That was really awesome. Even with all the craziness that went on the day, which has been regurgitated to death, and we talked about it on the Second Sons if you really want to see a discussion about some of the issues raised by that, but you really good run, Will, really really good.
Well, I think now is as good a time as any to go ahead and segue into our main topic for the week. I think it's no surprise to hardly
any of our listeners at this point that we had huge preview news straight out of FFG about the fourth chapter pack in the upcoming cycle and a certain little plot card coming in that pack. Anybody got any guesses what that is?
Forgotten Plans? No, wait, that's already out.
Yeah,
we've seen that one already.
The Pale Mare, right? That was a really popular reset, right? In 1.0?
I would love to see
Aftermath.
Oh, Aftermath. Yeah. Well, that's another one I would actually love to see that reprinted. I love the Aftermath.
No, it was actually the Fear of Winter, as it was.
Don't tease Tommy in his heart. Don't say that. Like, don't say that, Will. That's too mean. That's too real.
Okay. Well, then in that case, it was indeed Valar Morghulis. Several people, including our own resident Valor prognosticator Aaron, have been predicting its return. We had some confirmation a while back that it was eventually coming, and now we know specifically what it's going to have and stat-wise. So for anyone that hadn't caught the article on FFG or doesn't remember offhand, it's going to be a 2 gold, 0 initiative, 0 claim plot with 5 reserve, which of course is limited to 1 per deck, and when revealed, kills each character in play. So it is almost an exact reprint of the first edition, which is a very interesting place to be in second edition, I think. So we'll see how it goes from there. But I think rather than examining the broad strokes, we wanted to delve in and go ahead and start taking a look and brainstorming and thinking about how this plot impacts each of the houses on a case-by-case basis here. And we're going to take a look a little bit about both why or why not these houses may want to utilize Valor themselves, as well as taking a look at the flip side and chit-chatting about how we expect that to change or not change their deck building or game plan when they are facing an environment with Valor Morghulis. So I know we chatted a little bit about how we wanted to hit the order of these houses beforehand, and the guys convinced me to save the big three for the end, so stay tuned for those. But in the meantime, we're going to hit some of the houses that have more of a middling viewpoint on Valor upcoming. So, guys, which one would you like to hit first?
Why don't we start with the easiest, which I guess would be Bera? I think Bera is probably the least impacted, or its game chain, both what it wants to, how it wants to react to what its opponent's doing and what it wants to do, I think changes very little with Valor.
So I'll dissent a little bit on that and say, you know, given the soft control nature of what Bera is trying to do as of late, I think that having something that keeps the board small and allows them potentially to play multiple resets, like a Wildfire and a Valor potentially, and on top of that, even a First Snow, allowing them to replay some of their R'hllor cards, if they want to keep triggering and they have some way to keep Melisandre alive, if they're able to dupe her or whatever, if they're able to dupe up their Roberts or their Stannises, which they're apt to do, it's kind of their thing. It really can be a boon for them by keeping the board small and very manageable to control. Now, granted, I think that when they play against it, it's much more difficult for them, because if they haven't set up yet and they've marshaled out one of those characters and they get killed, it hurts them a lot more than some of the other houses. But I do think there is some application for Bera to take advantage.
I definitely agree there, Tommy. But what I meant more is, like, I think what Bera tries to do right now, at least to me, is it tries to get 2 to 3 of those big three out that you mentioned, Robert, Stannis, Melisandre, keep the board small and super protect those three people, either through dupes or bodyguards or, like, you know, iron mines or, you know, treacheries or whatever, to sort of protect them from being killed, and then use soft control to nail their opponent's board. That's not going to change at all with Bera. In some things, as you said, or with Valor for Bera, some things you said, like spot control becomes better, Melisandre becomes stronger in a small board. Maybe once you're set up, you know, with, you know, a couple of dupes and a bodyguard on Robert and Mel, you can offensively Valor or something like that. But I still think, like, Bera's game plan doesn't really change. It wants to may slow down a little because it needs to make sure it has a dupe and a bodyguard for Mel instead of just like playing her out there and then she can get Valor away. But I think overall, Bera's game plan changes nil. It still wants to do the same basic things that decks are trying to do now, just in a slightly different way because there's this more powerful reset than there was before.
I totally agree. I just wanted to point out the potential applications it could find.
Absolutely.
Yeah, gosh. At this point, I'm not sure if I have anything much else to add to that discussion. I would just reiterate that I think I agree as well that Baratheon's game plan changes arguably the least. They already want to get their big guys out and protect them. They already want boards small. This continues to play into that fairly well. There's the chance they get caught flat-footed every once in a while and go ahead and lay one of their key characters out without the save and lose them. But I don't think that's going to be highly detrimental. Particularly, I think that enough opponents utilizing Valor Morghulis overall plays into their hands in keeping the board small. The one thing that I do kind of wonder about is the kind of semi-intrigue hole that's kind of been built into them. Now, granted, they can definitely work to overcome that, but that's something for them to be watching for, I think, to make sure they're not caught even more flat-footed with an opposing Valor. On the other hand, they already have some of the best card draw in the game with the Red Keep, and with smaller boards, that +2 strength in that challenge could also have an even bigger impact. So, you know, we'll see. Overall, I think their position is kind of neutral on it. It stays about the same.
I'm glad you touched on that, Will. That was one of the things that I forgot to mention that I really wanted to, was I think the power of Red Keep gets so much better in a Valor environment.
Absolutely. I think this is sort of going a little broader, but I think card advantage in the traditional 1.0/magic sense of cards in your hand gets a lot higher with Valor coming up. So factions with reliable draw, and Bera has, I believe, probably the most reliable draw in the game, become even more important. So I think particularly, I do think maybe Bera might be getting some intrigue tools in the second cycle because the Banter Boy is spoiled the Ruby of Valor, right? That sort of rewards you for winning intrigue challenges, which says to me that, you know, maybe that hole is going to get at least a little bit filled, similar to what happened with Stark and Greyjoy in the first cycle. So maybe Bera, you know, be in a good position, I think, to sort of ride the wave of Valor.
That card looks like a lot of fun to me. I won't go into fully analyzing it or anything, but I do like that. The Ruby.
Right.
It rewards people with really good memory.
Oh, yeah. Unless you're allowed to write it down. Is that specifically prohibited?
You're not allowed to have like anything. You're not allowed to have notebooks or anything in the rules. So, I mean, maybe you could write it on your hand. You know.
I do that for reminders an awful lot, actually. Otherwise, I'm apt to forget to pay bills or something. Okay. I think that is definitely a sign that it's time to move on to the next house, if I'm digressing that much. So who would you throw on us next?
Targ.
I'm good with that.
I think that sounds great.
Well, I guess I'll start again. I think Targ is in a similar situation to Bera in the sense that its game plan doesn't change. It already has maybe a few of its tools that it has, like Blood Magic Ritual. Well, no, that Blood Magic Ritual costs 1 gold, so no, it doesn't get in value. But things like Fire and Blood, right? That's the name of the Hatchling returning event, becomes more valuable. Protecting Danny, which is already what Dex wants to do. The sort of high aggro Dothraki sort of stuff doesn't really change. So, I mean, I think in many ways, Targ, if anything, Valor hurts Targ more because Targ is already really badly impacted by the current reset that we have, First Snow of Winter. And so Valor kind of already cuts against them because, you know, it makes running the dragons not quite as great, and now it makes Danny slightly harder to protect. So it sort of puts Targ in an awkward situation. But if Targ gets more burn and more control in the future, maybe we'll see a situation where Targ really loves Valor. But I think coming out of just what we have from the first cycle and the beginning of the second, I think Targ's sort of main house Targ, not Banner of the Dragon, is really just sort of in the same sort of awkward, unsettled position that it is in right now in the current meta. So I think in many ways, Targ being sort of main house Targ being kind of garbage tier right now or lower tier is just made worse by Valor.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a six of one, half dozen of the other sort of thing. I think that kind of washes out. I agree with you that it's likely to help some of their aggro aspects and such. And of course, if you can stick a Khal Drogo and keep him on the board and not lose him to Valor, of course, that extra military claim or the extra kill from, say, Plaza of Punishment or something just has that much more brutal of an effect because it's harder to build a board wide enough to fight that off. But on the flip side, you know, so much of Targaryen still can rotate around a single character in Daenerys, and or at least, you know, have multiple other cards that specifically only refer to her. So if you're playing that kind of deck and you get caught and lose her, I think that definitely is a problem. So it kind of washes out in the middle of all.
I think that's a really good way of putting it. Well, I think for me, it's archetype specific when it comes to Targaryen. If you're talking about an archetype like Smash Brothers, for example, I think that you can either benefit from your opponent eventually having to run into their own Valor or from you being able to really own the first three or four turns and then play it offensively because you've built up your duplicates to your bodyguards and you've already killed everything of value except for maybe their one triplicated guy or whatever it is, and all that excessive kill really just helps them there. And then when it comes to the Daenerys builds, I think if you're able to return characters to play, if you're building with it in mind, you can definitely weather that storm. And sometimes, probably given things like Crown of Gold and your other burn, you may be able to more effectively and consistently remove high quality targets from your opponent's board because there's not enough burn redundancy right now to make the, I can't remember the name of the plot right now, the Threat of Winter, or I'm sorry, Threat from the North. Thank you. That equivalency, you can't really take advantage of that as much as you really want to. And maybe just having burn to remove the small targets, claim to remove the dupes, and then finishing off big characters with a Valor offensively might actually end up being a viable option. But I think that it's definitely not something that's going to really change the way that Targ looks at their game plan.
You know, actually, a thought occurred to me as you were talking about some of that stuff, that the more I think about it, the more I think actually Valor is going to be a bigger issue for Targaryen than I thought, against them, that is. Now, with Baratheon, we hit on the Red Keep, likely getting even better Valor meta is admittedly kind of hard to believe, judging by how good it is now. On the other hand, Targaryen's card advantage cards in the more...
going to be exploited.
Well, I was going to say they're all predicated on having characters in play to do things. Like, the Red Keep is much more on your opponent to have characters to stop you, to win that power challenge against you. On the other side, Targaryen's is all about having Dany on the board for insight, having Miri on the board for kill, having characters to win power challenges with, to trigger Plaza, having a Hatchling or Dany to kneel to actually play Dracarys, things like that. You know, the more I kind of think about it, I think it may be harder for them to access that stuff with Valor in the environment.
Well, this might be as good of a spot as any to tackle this topic because you've got both Miri and Daenerys in Targaryen, and they're both seven costers, highly impactful, very good cards. Do you think the existence of this in the environment changes the attitude of people playing seven costers?
I think it does for many factions, and I think Targaryen is probably one of them. I think also probably Night's Watch and Martell. I think for others, I think for Stark And when we get to the Lannister, the two factions that all have boxes, possibly by the time in which we do that. So there's a lot of redundancy throughout the cost curve, particularly at the expense of, you know, Stark's Rennie. Its sixth spot is just full of beautiful characters that you love and change the board. And Lannister has already got a plethora of seven cost characters, and it's getting two more good seven cost characters that, you know, if they kill Tywin, you still have these other bombs that can still win you the game in your deck. That could be in your deck. So I think it really depends on the faction that more expensive characters are going to disappear from the meta, I think. But for sort of these sort of the factions that already kind of the best way to put this would be the factions that already kind of lean a little bit mini Kirby-ish, like Tyrell and some Targ decks and Night's Watch, of course, are just going to double down on that strategy, I think, in a Valor environment.
Well, thanks, Roy. You got everything that I was trying to hit there. Sorry you didn't leave anything for you, Will.
Yeah, exactly. Man, everyone's being so so full-featured in responses.
Efficiency. Well, efficiency comes up in value, which I think we'll get to when we sort of talk about Tyrell and Lannister. But I do want to go back to something Tommy said, though. I do think, actually, Blood of the Dragon becomes stronger. I really... which is something when Tommy was talking that came back to me, because it's going to, because this will push curves, even if seven costers definitely don't disappear from the meta, which I don't think they will. I think people that are worried about that, I think it's a little overblown.
Yep.
Yeah. But I think certain seven costers, as we said, from factions may disappear, but you'll still be playing as Tywin. Okay. You'll definitely see plenty of Tywin. But I think Blood is going to require people, though, to have more cheap, non-unique characters to sort of reflood the board after Valor turn. And that makes Blood of the Dragon powerful.
Significantly better. I agree with you.
Yeah, but that's good. So Burn becomes, I think, a little bit stronger in the post-Valor meta. So that's a plus for Targ.
Though you likely won't utilize both of those plots in the same plot deck. Two old plots, I think, is pretty killer.
Yeah, until we get Greg's agenda back.
This will be the day.
You just tickled him because he loves the fact that you called it that.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the kind of... Because, I mean, well, I'm sure all of us played in first edition against those sort of like Targ, Knights of the Hollow Hill burn builds that ran like literally every reset. Maybe this is just a New York thing, but like the Dave Strohm's Dan Struhal decks ran like every possible reset that they could.
Ooh, yeah.
And just use the economy advantage that the agenda provided you with, and the resource advantage that it provided you with, to sort of just own people.
Every meta had at least one, even if they were a poser.
So we could see the return of that, but that's really speaking far in the future.
But just like we oftentimes talk about burn in general, and we talk about soft control in general, we talk about aggro in general, rush in general, I think there's some value to having something like that in the meta just as a counterbalance. But we'll have plenty of time to get into that, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think I said this a little bit on the recent Second Sons. I think actually one of the problems that the meta has right now is that burn isn't around to keep it honest. That was one of the really good things about, well, good things in a meta sense about the meta, in an abstract sense about the 1.0 meta, was that burn decks kept these kind of like big central character decks very, very honest. And the fact that Dracarys doesn't hit some of these bombs, and there's not a lot of other burn options for Targaryen right now, is kind of actually a problem. And maybe Valor will help burn a little bit and help keep the meta a little bit more honest than it is right now.
I think that's pretty legitimate commentary there.
Okay. Does that send us on to the next one then, I'm guessing? I'm going to go ahead and take a pick this time. I'm going to go with Stark. How about that?
That's a fun one.
Stark's a fun one.
Okay. So what do we feel about Stark? You know, honestly, I think Valor plays into some of their game plans quite a bit. If you're heading into some of the kill and sacrifice stuff, it's another tool for the fat cat decks, which I like, provided, of course, you can keep her on the board, as well as them having a little bit of additional built-in save with Jory Cassell. So I think there's some solid options there, though they've also got, you know, this power grab theme and this kind of power spread, power diaspora, I kind of want to call it, with Eddard and minstrels and such. So like the wider you're having to spread that power on characters, course, the more vulnerable it is to a mass reset like this. So I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, to Roy's point that he made before, I think that given that they have the box right now, they tend to have more impactful characters that they have access to, and they can kind of start getting closer to a 1.0 style build where you're not running three copies of every impactful character. You're running one copy or two copies of several impactful characters to spread yourself around and make yourself less susceptible to that. And then the ones that are really key to your strategy, they have some built-in things like the Winterfell Heartree, I believe is the name of the card right now. That's a discard to save the character or negate the plot effects or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, the main problem with that card is you have to say it before the plot phase begins. So
it's good player text, but I mean, guess what? Everybody who hasn't been around in a Valor environment, you're going to start to know when Valor's coming.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. And I definitely want to reiterate that. I think actually Valor is a pretty good balancing card both for and against Stark. I think Will is definitely spot on, particularly in Melee, that the new cat decks are really going to like Valor. I think like it more than Wildfire because you can use things like Jory to save characters on a Valor turn when you can't do that on Wildfire. So, you know, you can your two Chud can die and you can save Rob and use your dupe to save Catelyn and you have an awesome board and their entire board is dead. And you got two power out of it. So I think that's good. But also, the nice thing about Valor at an abstract level is it keeps rush decks under control, right? So if you can somehow get 90 power, well, not that you would win the game, but if you can in one turn get 12 power, say, on your characters and only like, or 10 power on your characters and 2 on your house, right? Because of some just craziness, you had a beautiful turn where all of your Stark rush tech went off. Your opponent just Valors on the second turn. And if you aren't prepared for that, you know, that rush deck is, it's game over for you. Or at least you're significantly slowed down to the point in which your opponent can come back. So I do think certain Stark builds will definitely use Valor and certain ones will have to always build, particularly the rushier ones. And I would expect that the Tully rush theme isn't going anywhere considering it was present in the box. I actually think of all the houses, Valor is sort of firmly middle of the road for Stark. It's good in certain builds, a problem for other builds, which means it's just a really interesting card for them.
Well, and given so much of the ability to add kill that they have, either via the Direwolves or raising the claim with, you know, Winter's Coming, things like that, I think there's potential in the future for there to be a more traditional Stark kill build.
Oh yeah, with the new King Rob too. Really makes that Stark murder deck look really good.
And I kind of like that diversity in strategy that they're showing.
Absolutely. Another thing, though, that I just sort of thinking about that cat deck in Melee, one of the things that I am going to be a little bit sad about when it comes to Melee, because I played a couple of games recently, sort of getting my brain around it for Gen Con, is one of the nice things about 2.0 Melee is you don't have to basically expect 1 to 2 players to Valor on turn 2 like you often did in Melee games in first edition. So it's definitely going to change the Melee meta a lot. And thinking about Stark made me think about that.
Which I think will be nice. Anything to kind of get people into a better pacing and kind of watching in a Melee game, I think is a good one. Another thought that had occurred to me is, you know, I'm back to thinking about where their kind of card advantage type stuff is. And you guys hit on some with some of the additional kill like Grey Wind. And of course, we mentioned some of the save and kind of unity sort of effects. I didn't catch anyone mention Summer as a way to help kind of repopulate a board quickly after Valor. But another thing is just they do have Gates of Winterfell. Now, it's going to constrain your deck building some, but I like that, yes, they have several character-based options, but they do also have something in the location realm for that, which I think is pretty important for both weathering and utilizing a Valor environment.
Well, and just because you brought up Summer, the next point that I was going to make is that they specifically, relative to some of the other houses, have some really good quality characters at a low cost point, like your Sansa's, Arya's, Summer's, where they can, you know, hold those back or, you know, have one in their dead pile and bounce them out there along with Summer on a Valor turn and really, you know, change the game.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, you can get, you know, Summer can come out on a Valor turn, right? If you're playing Stark Fealty, which is pretty nice. I think, again, I think Stark, I think of all the factions, I would say Stark is, it's just, it's very balanced when it comes to Valor. There's so many interesting things that you can do with it and that you have to worry about with Stark. So it's definitely, I think if you want to look into a faction that's a good argument for Valor being a positive shakeup for the meta, it would be Stark.
Well, and thematically, it always gave me the feel that for any faction, Valor is the most come from behind rally card for Stark as opposed to anyone else.
Okay, well, we're moving along at a solid clip, but I think some good discussion here, guys. But let's go ahead and kick it on over to the next house. I think Tommy had some thoughts on what he wanted to hit next.
Well, rather than a house, I think we should take a faction.
Ooh, that still hurts. That still hurts.
So we'll take the black here.
Oh, Tommy.
Is that kind of like terrible?
Yeah, that was awful. Oh, I apologize.
Boys.
To everyone listening, I apologize for that. I couldn't help myself. But no, I think that that's definitely the next one we should talk about. As we mentioned, there's some impact in terms of the 7 coster that's currently available, and that may be changing slightly as some of the cards that have been spoiled continue to come out. But I think there's also some overlooked strategies of just utter efficiency that Night's Watch tends to do better than anyone else in terms of high strength for low cost, ability to get gold in situations where it shouldn't have gold, and the ability to also turn other resources into card draw. So all those things spell to me, take advantage of Valor.
I totally agree. I think the fact that some of the things that, you know, the fact that Night's Watch is sort of a faction that is the default mini curve faction really helps them in the Valor meta. I think the fact that right now they already run generally of their unique characters they have, they, unless you're like doubling down on the old bear, but even like doubling down the old bear is okay because you have things like Aemon. You know, most, besides Aemon and maybe the old bear, they're running maybe 2 copies of a lot of their uniques. Maybe Will, you'll see some Night's Watch decks running 3 Wills. That'll probably go down with the Valor. But in generally, they can get away with running, you know, 1 to 2 copies of all their unique characters. And they have a lot of non-unique characters that are really good and efficient, like the army, like the companion, the Unsworn Apprentice, and things like that. So they're already in good position to take advantage of Valor. Offensively, them doing Valor because they can flood the board cheaply. You know, Night's Watch can do a lot with 2 gold. The fact that their draw engine returns to the hand, you know, gives them a really strong advantage to sort of get the cards they need off the board, Valor, and then put them back on the board, and then draw more cards to refill their hand the next turn to come out strong. The fact that like key cards are locations for them, which are immune, you know, they can do a nice set up their locations, Valor away their opponent's characters, and then play their own and start hitting away.
And don't forget, they can also steal away a character that the opponent is able to squeeze out in a low cost situation.
Absolutely. And the choke, like the ability to choke your opponent when they Valor you, you know, turn their 2 gold plot that maybe they get 3 gold because they have a King's Road out or Rose Road out, become just 2 or 1 gold, you know, and it looks like they're getting more choke in the cycle, you know, that's all really strong for Night's Watch. And I think so. And Aemon, of course, letting you save himself or save the key Night's Watch character that you need, like the old bear, really puts them in a great situation for both offensively Valoring or playing it in their own plot deck and surviving their opponent's Valor.
But I think it changes the imminent threat level. I mean, this was always the look for those mini curve Night's Watch decks, super efficiency Night's Watch decks, but they're really able to up the stakes a little bit now that they have this in their back pocket.
Well, I think another couple points here. I admit when we first kind of started trying to map this out, I was kind of down on Night's Watch in this regard, thinking, you know, some people may have some trouble pacing themselves at Flood too early. I think that may be kind of a gameplay thing. I do still think wall-style builds definitely take a hit with Valor in the meta up against them. But I think you guys have convinced me on the mini-curve stuff. In particular, Roy's note that you've got some card advantage in the Ravens that return to hand. effectively allowing them to dodge a plot-based reset, which I love. Though it also means to me that I think we've already seen a little bit that reserve value is going to matter to Night's Watch. And I think that this is likely to increase that. I think you are going to want to keep your hand full to play after an offensive valor, or, you know, to refill after your opponent hits you with one. And on a less relevant note, hopefully, you guys are missing one of the greatest things. This is another way for you to play Night's Watch Sun and trigger the double Benjen stuff, right?
He's loyal. Ouch.
No. Quentin and Benjen are both non-loyal characters.
See? There you go, guys. So I guess you could do it as Martell's Watch. But either way, here's another way to kill them simultaneously.
The white book does not encourage this.
I mean, it is a combo, so I still kind of want to encourage it, even if it leaves a bit of a dirty taste in my mouth.
But Benjen is a good example of a kind of nice watch, an excellent Night's Watch card. You know, you can for in a Valor meta. Valor is actually a good answer to First Snow. You know, if your opponent does First Snow you and you lose most of your board and it's a really bad turn for you, you can respond the next turn with your own Valor and say they have their great character, you know, their great 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 cost, whatever characters out there, you can Valor in response. You know, with those characters vulnerable when you have a largely empty board. So it does create more flexibility for Night's Watch. And I think it's a reset that Night's Watch is actually really going to be happy with, compared to the other two that are in the game right now.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was something I meant to mention earlier and then got away from it. I actually do think that Valor being available in the meta depresses the usage of First Snow. But yeah, so I think people are going to want to hit that bigger stuff much more, which I think kind of opens the door for Night's Watch mini curve to be more reliable when these mass resets are something that encourage the mini curve rather than punish it, as we're kind of talking about.
Yeah, so I think that's really legitimate commentary. And the one thing that I'll say is that it might not be so much as everybody prefers Valor, but I think the two options are going to be very determinate in relative to what type of deck you're trying to play. It doesn't necessarily say it's only going to be one path or the other. It's just going to be Valor all the time. I think it just accentuates the archetypes where you're going to try and take advantage of one or the other and make you pick a lane more, unless you're designing a deck that's just hoping to exploit as many resets and board disruptions as possible. And I think that we'll probably end up getting to that with some of the other factions that are upcoming. But I still think there's going to be a place for First Snow in the environment.
I absolutely agree. I don't think First Snow is going to vanish, but I do think there's more of a, if you want a really impactful reset, there are now going to be, I think, two options. When Wildfire, I definitely still, in the Aaron Glazer, Wildfire is not that great of a card camp. And I'm glad that we are going to have two really, really impactful resets that will give control and other decks more options than just First Snow.
I think there's going to be decks out there that people try and play all of them.
I think Dave Bamford will build one of those decks and probably win something with one. I definitely think those decks are going to exist. Do we want to move on to what do we have left before we've got only, I think, one more faction right left before we move into our big three, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, sunshine.
You're in a punny mood today, Tommy.
Yeah, I'm trying to be happy in the eye of the storm here.
Well, Tommy's song sort of suggests, I think, Martell is the last faction left. And I think if there's a faction that's going to like that, just sort of kick this off and then I'll throw it to the two of you. If there's a faction that's going to really like the three reset deck, maybe four if they're running Varus, which I don't think that's a little excessive, but maybe, it's going to be Martell. Martell really, I think, likes Valor, but I also, for a variety of reasons, mini curve reasons, control deck reasons, the non-terminal attachment reasons. So Martell likes Valor.
So Non-terminal attachments and punishment for losing entry challenges are the two reasons that I think that Martell's really going to benefit. And I also think their ability to throw out Gas and Gray, things like that, and say, hey, if you're able to put a character out there on my Valor turn that's going to make me pay for it, I'm just going to eliminate it and it doesn't matter.
Same with Vengeance for Elia, which you can just natively afford from Valor without playing anything else, is a really good.
Yep. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, that's solid. And the non-terminal attachment, I think that's the biggest to me. Like, whatever they try to refill the board with, like, once again, you have just, you know, get the chance to neuter it all once those attachments are back in your hand. So I think this is another faction where, I mean, reserve matters as a general rule for all the factions. But I feel like a lot of the pacing of the game has come to a point where people can consistently hover exactly at their reserves without pushing too hard one way or the other. But particularly for Night's Watch and Martell, I feel like managing that reserve effectively is about to become much more important.
I think,
you know what else is really fun on a Valor turn, like just prognosticating the future, is Bastard Daughter. You can afford it. You put it out. You can defend their military challenge that they want to do. But then, hey, you're already hurting for cards. Here, let's yank another one.
Or even just having them out and getting them Valored away. Like, they're great chud to die on.
Certainly.
A Valor turn. Yeah. I think Martell's strength in the Intrigue Challenge, you know, they're sort of the only faction that can really consistently compete with Lannister in the Intrigue world. I think it's really going to help them a lot. I think it's going to make... But I think, unlike Night's Watch, they are going to run into what Will is saying, where they don't have any reserve manipulation tools. So they have the weakest draw in the game. So I think they're going to be in a pretty balanced situation. I think actually Night's Watch is going to probably, Valor's going to be a very high skill cap within Martell. Martell's going to naturally gravitate towards it, but figuring out that way to sort of manage your hand size and protect it, you know, hit your opponent, empty your opponent's hand, and then Valor their good stuff away and they can't refill the board. Like, being able to achieve that in the right ratio without having to end up chugging good cards to reserve or falling too far behind and just losing even when you Valor is really going to make Martell a very difficult faction to play at the most optimum level.
Yeah, it'll be high player tech, but I think the players that do find it will really be tough to beat.
Very similar to 1.0 in that case. I mean, thank God for reserve, though, sort of killing those. Again, just to talk a little bit about 1.0, like these sort of these Martell decks that just, you know, had 30 cards in their hand and it looked like they had a deck in their hand and then just sort of
sat and waited.
Yeah, sat and waited.
Those were the days. I love that.
You know, that reserve thankfully checks that. And Martell's inability to manipulate that really does keep it in check. But I think Martell is going to be happy with it, but it is definitely going to be a high skills cap faction.
Now, the one thing that they do have available to them that gets around some of the negative effects of Valor is the long game, where they're able to play that preemptively. I mean, when you sit down against a Martell player, you know that they're not going to be looking for a quick win, and it's probably going to be expected that there's going to be a Valor probably mid to late game. But even them giving you that tell that they're playing long game first, it's an advantage that you're not going to be able to overcome retroactively. Unless you predict that they're going to play that the turn before, I don't know that there's much you can do.
Yeah, the long plan, I think, definitely goes up in value when Valor comes out. I mean, the ability to have a 6 gold Valor is pretty nuts.
Yeah, I've got to agree with that. And not just literally the long plan plot, but just in general, the long plan tends to favor several of Martell's effects. And
right,
having Valor in the field tends to push those games to run long and gives you a better chance to maximize those effects.
And an ability to play that Vengeance for Elia and then do something else on top of it.
You know, since Will likes combos, the fact that you can, you know, win the game on a Valor turn with Doran's game, which doesn't require you to win, you know, to win, you know, get any claim, you can still claim three God or four power it. Off that, you know. Like, oh, yeah, I'll let this free challenge go through. You know, whatever. It's not going to be a huge impact. They don't have any claim. Oh, okay, so I win the game because I just claimed four power. So, you know, like, Martel is definitely in a good situation to make use of that zero claim.
Again, well possible. The White Book does not advocate this as a strategy.
It's in with Indoran's name. Yeah, that also is a good Valor card on a Valor turn.
Yeah.
But yeah, Martel, fun times. They're going to love it.
They are.
My final thought on that particular front, though, is as Roy mentioned Melee earlier with some situations, that I think is going to really lead to some interesting calculations in Melee when the Martel player who has a revealed Valor that turn is begging you, come on, let me make that zero claim and, you know, intrigue challenge at. It's not like I have the Master of Whisperers title. And then you have to calculate, could they play that?
Yeah, that'll change perspective for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And then cards like Quentin go up in value. I mean, just and the fact, one last sort of just listing off good Martel cards. What's the name of the location, the 2-cost location that every time you lose a challenge, you put a token on it?
The Boneway.
Boneway goes up in value. Like the any card that lets you claim power without having characters in play or stock away for later dates, and the wall becomes stronger actually in a Valor meta. Like things that let you claim power that don't necessarily interact immediately with characters really go up in a Valor meta.
For Melee, couldn't agree more.
Okay. Man, does that send us into the big three already?
Welcome to the main event.
The main event. The people who are sort of, I think, one faction is like desperately dreaming of, I think, yeah, one faction is just dreaming of Valor coming out, wishes it was already out. And
you gotta specify here. One faction desperately dreaming of it. One faction is just dreaming. Which one were you wanting to start with?
Well, why don't we start with Tyrell, which I think
they're the Valor ones.
They're the desperate. Well, actually, another one I think is like really desperately like, or salvating, like they can, like anyone. I mean, even the FFG article brings up why one of these factions is really strong in a Valor meta. But
I think there's a difference between salvating and pining.
Yeah.
And where we are here with Tyrell, they have been pining for this.
Yeah.
They've ever been since given the tools to exploit, and now it's their time.
Yeah, ever since we saw the Arbor come out, I've just been wanting this around. I mean, Roy was mentioning previously some of the former very reset-heavy decks that use the Knights of the Hollow Hill agenda in first edition and kind of used its income to offset the lower general stats of a lot of their plots. And, you know, it just, I tried it, but it was okay, but never quite seemed to get there. And I'm really hoping now that Valor is going to be the tool needed to leverage the Arbor, to leverage the just piles of card advantage and filtering that Tyrell has. I feel like in-house, currently, they're still maybe lacking a punch card or two. But I'm really hoping that Valor gives them the leverage that I feel like I've been.
Well, I think Tyrell is in an even similar position to Night's Watch, but even more desperate, right? Because I think Tyrell, the fact that its cards, it lacks some of the real bombs, and its bombs haven't really kept up with like Knight of Flowers, Standy Randy haven't really kept up with the bomb levels
Standy,
that other fact.
Wow. Yeah, that's why have I not heard that before? That's great.
Yeah. You know, or Daddy Tarly is the other name I use when I see him hit the board. You know, and the Arbor facilitates, you know, the sort of mini curve nature of things. And the fact that, you know, what Tyrell does have going for it is efficient characters. Like Arbor Knight is an amazingly efficient character who's just completely undone and great value by First Snow. And the fact that Valor brings some balance into the First Snow meta is really good. The fact that Tyrell can have a 5-gold Valor, the fact that Tyrell can make it so that their draw on their Valor turn is perfect with Baron the Maiden Fair, or make sure that their opponent's draw is terrible, that they, you know, draw two Rose Roads on their Valor turn, on the turn you're Valoring them, Or you do things like Metchamora, Gift of Arbor Red them and give them bad cards while giving yourself the card you need to come back from. Like Tyrell's tools are just waiting for something to allow them to leverage their efficient but unimpactful characters in a way, I think even more desperately than Night's Watch, because Night's Watch has things like the wall and it synergizes really well with things like Varys, you know, those old Varys builds. But Tyrell sort of doesn't have the tools to keep up. And, you know, in a way, even Night's Watch is able to get around. So now Tyrell main house with the Arbor, even on the inability to dupe it on setup, really positions them to be a force in the meta that I think will be really good.
Well, outside of mentioning the two singleton knights that you're going to be running in your Tyrell build, I think that Roy, you nailed it. Those two knights just exacerbate everything that you were saying and allow you to do a lot more stuff on command. But that's the gist of it for Tyrell. And it's there, and it's going to be mean and hard to deal with.
I hope it's going to be mean. I guess, like, I want this to be the piece that I was missing. I'm excited to try it out, but I'm still skeptical. You know, I feel like I'm still going to wind up wanting something more in-house that gives me some kind of bomb. They have a lot of manipulation of decks. A lot of resources, be that the card or gold variety, but it, you know, as Roy said, just not much in the bomb department. And their efficiency, while I think good, probably is not as good as the Night's Watch. So it doesn't stand on its own quite as well. So I don't know. I'm gonna play it out. I'm excited. I definitely agree that Valor is going to have one of the biggest impacts for Tyrell, and I think a fairly low impact against due to their high amount of resources of, again, both the card and gold varieties. We'll just see how it shakes out, I guess.
Well, one of the more interesting things about Tyrell is I actually don't think they're mean. When you lose to Tyrell, it's a weird feeling because they don't necessarily do the kind of things that, like, make you angry when you're playing Thrones, at least to me, like playing against like Lanny Dragon, when you played all these cool cards and you're like, oh, I get to do cool stuff. And they're like, nope, that good character dies to Put to the Sword. That good character dies to Miri. I'm going to tears this character. And what are you going to do? And you're like, oh my God, look at all those awesome characters in Deadpile. You know, fuck this game. But when you lose to Tyrell, you're like, wait, very few of my characters are dead. You know, you drew some cards. Hey, you put a card in my hand. Hey, that was kind of cool, even if it was just a Rose Road. Oh, you know, oh, all of a sudden you went from like 3 power to 15 and you were just sort of pumping your own guys to win challenges. What's going on here? Like, I think one of the things I like about Tyrell, and I hope that Valor really makes them do, is the fact that they play the game in a very like positive way. And I mean that in the sense of what they do adds to their own board versus taking away from their opponents primarily.
I think exactly what you're saying is really good for the game.
Oh yeah.
I think it's really thematic too, though. I mean, everything that Tyrell is about in the story, they're trying to make you feel like you're their friend, even though they're positioning themselves ahead of you. And I think that they're capturing that very well in the game based on what you're saying there.
Absolutely, I agree. I just think on a competitive level, it's not quite there yet. And I think tools like Valor, and maybe if they get a bomb, like probably we're going to get a Tyrell King, right? You know, possibly Renly, who knows? But that's what, if I was a betting man, that's what I would bet. Maybe that'll be a bomb, or we'll get like, you know, another Marjorie or something like that that could, you know, give a bomb or two to Tyrell. And once you get sort of a couple extra tools, this very different way of playing, one of the things I like about second edition, like Stark plays so distinctly, Night's Watch plays so distinctly, Targ plays so distinctly. And I think, you know, with Sacrifice and Stark and Burn and Targ, and I think Night's Watch does, not, excuse me, not Night's Watch, Tyrell does that, but it's just not quite at a competitive level yet. And I'm excited to take a Tyrell deck to a tournament. You know, obviously Sam won Worlds with Tyrell, but generally speaking, take a Tyrell deck to a tournament and feel like I am playing this game in this way and it has a chance of winning me the tournament.
Hey, Patrick, Roy's calling.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to say that I think while I definitely agree with your analysis about Tyrell being much more positively focused than negatively focused, as I think about it, I pretty sure that is the reason why they feel like they don't have any bombs, right? Like, all of the other factions, as I said here, I can think of some potent means that they have to undo the opponent's game plan. Tyrell doesn't have one. So maybe I'm delving too far outside into general things about their faction. I don't know.
I'll disagree with you a little bit there, because, I mean, he's not a traditional bomb in the way that you're looking for it in the other factions, but I feel like Knight of Flowers is that card for Tyrell. He says that he is going to be in the challenge by himself, and he's going to take advantage of all the tricks that Tyrell has to offer, and you've got your one dude to try and stop him.
Yeah, that guy is annoying. Yeah, he's really
funny. Think he's exactly that, but it's so underhanded, like Roy was saying. It's not aggressively saying, well, your character's fucked, or he's dead, or he's back in your hand, or he's dead. So you kind of just say, oh, he's just a guy. But as you sit there and play against him, he just gradually bites your leg off with little tiny bites.
Yeah, it's easy to forget how powerful the Knight of Flowers was in the core set in the early, even though it's been less than a year, because so many other bombs have began outpacing him, even with the Hound, right? We were already starting to see cards that outpace him, but
totally,
he's still really
good. He's a lot less play because of it, but he's still there. And when something spurs him back into rotation, he's still going to be just as good.
Right. To mention, like, Aaron, like, when he won Red Saturday way back early in the core set meta, or I think we had one pack out then, like, I watched the Knight of Flowers just, like, you know, win a power challenge consistently every turn for him, and he was able, and Aaron was basically able to, you know, win the game on the back of those sort of those sort of situations, because, you know, your opponent can't do a lot about this character, you know. And while there are flashier effects now, the Knight of Flowers is still a really, really powerful card that I do think, I agree with Tommy, that Valor, strangely, is going to empower him, because, of course, again, boards are going to be smaller, big characters that could get in the way of Loras are going to die and things like that. So again, we're just really hammering home, I think, this point that even Will, I think, who's probably the most flower skeptical of all of us, is going to be empowered by this card.
Roy, hashtag flower skeptical is trending right now.
Oh my. Okay. Well, I'm pretty certain if we are talking flower skeptical, that is a good sign that we've hit all of the directly Valor pertinent information on Tyrell available moment. So let's head to the next house. I'm going to go ahead and vote that we leave probably the most controversial, least overly hyped and talked about house overall right now for last, and instead go to Griggs.
Nailed it.
All right. I mean,
oh, Greyjoy.
Greyjoy. What more do you need to say? They have risen from the sea and iron mines, and mainly they have irons. I'm not really digging Risen from the Sea at the moment lately. I like that save sitting on the board where my opponent is demoralized out of using their kill effects, and most importantly, isn't just going to cancel with Hand's Judgment for free, which seemed to happen to me anytime I had to save some with Risen from the Sea. But regardless, they have a lot of saves, and they have this crazy, unopposed, stealth aggro theme. I say crazy, but it's really not. It's just crazy how well that fits just a board-wide reset like that. I think anybody that knows me from first edition knows that that same type of game plan, the broad strokes, was what I played in Melee for like 4 years running at championships, and made the cut in almost all of them. Actually, I've probably played it in more than just four, but that's as far back as my memory goes, where I can't say for sure I didn't try and play Martell for 1 year or something.
Well, and you also, you know, worked on a build with me and helped me out with the vast majority of the deck that I played for Melee and made the top 16 last year of 1.0. Same strategy. And it was awesome.
Yeah, and I played LIV2 in at Gen Con and got in the top 16. And it had a, well, not an unopposed strategy, but a very similar sort of, it could offensively Valor which is what we're talking about here.
Right. That's what I was dancing. Thank you for putting it out there. Tell the listeners what you really...
What I mean by that is, I mean, Will's already sort of laid the pieces out, right? You have Risen from the Sea, an in-hand save, and you have Iron Mines, which allows you to... You have awesome characters on the board, and your opponent would say, oh, there's no way she's going to Valor. And nope, she does. Because she can save all of her good characters, or most of her good characters, like, say, Balon, Asha... the reader, right? With two Iron Mines and a Risen. And you can't treachery most of the time on, and this is just a second edition version of this, which makes Iron Mines stronger. And yes, you can Hand's Judgment, but you have to have that Hand's Judgment in your hand for that Valor turn, which really allows your opponent who's already under pressure from the aggro style of Greyjoy to really be under even more pressure, because unless they also had their own dupes or bodyguards or Iron Mines or what have you, they're going to be in trouble. And very few factions in first edition had that kind of, you know, save situation. So a defensive Valor could be really strong, really swingy. And I think it's going to be the same situation in second edition for Greyjoy, particularly because the Seastone Share does not give a shit about zero claim, right? If you're capable of saving Balon and, or even not even Balon, but, you know, Asha or even Theon, like any character with stealth that might be able to push on this thin board, that military challenge through on the Valor turn, your claim replacement effect will still go off, will still be able to kill that Tywin that they were able to save, or that Tyrion or what, or that Robb that they were able to save, or Catelyn that they were able to save. So I think Greyjoy's ability to leverage Valor, not just as a defensive tool of a board ripe to sort of get themselves back in the game, but to just sort of close a game out, is going to be really strong.
Right, and there's nothing more frustrating than rocking a offensive Valor and spending your on the board saves to preserve your characters, and then your opponent trying to do everything they possibly can to furiously rally, and then only to have you drop your zero cost Risen from the Seas and say, oh, that's all you had, game over.
Oh, and you still claim unopposed power, even if it's zero claim, right? So many of those things still go off. In fact, I think Greyjoy even more doubles down on the unopposed, or maybe triples or quadruples down.
Totally agree.
Yeah, in second edition on this theme. So really, everything Greyjoy wants to do, it can still do when it plays Valor.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm all over it. I think overall, they are the house that is single-handedly most excited.
It also lets them keep up with factions like Lannister, which I think one of the problems that Greyjoy has right now is it's missing one extra tool to sort of smooth out some of its bad matchups, like Martell, for example. And I think the ability to offensively Valor away key threats while preserving your own board is really going to help, I think, push Greyjoy out of tier two where it is right now and firmly make it tier one, particularly with that Spoil Greyjoy card. I don't remember what it was called. Like 10 Towers? The one that gives stealth that was spoiled.
Pike.
And the fact that you can give even your chud, like your two cost chud on a Valor turn stealth to push through a military challenge with a Seastone Share or get that final unopposed that you need to win the game, you know, and the ability to Valor on one turn and then go into Rise of the Kraken on the next turn is really, really, really painful for your opponent. And I think is really going to make Greyjoy, again, a force to be reckoned with and a force to set Facebook and Card Game to be on fire like it was early in the game.
All that stuff's pretty legit, but the one thing that I'll say is they're the house that's worst positioned to deal with the economic implications of playing Valor.
That's absolutely true. If you catch a Greyjoy player at a time in which they don't want to be Valored, it could be really awkward.
On the other hand, economically, they do also have Urine Crow's Eye, which, you know, admittedly, you have to get a couple things to line up. But if they get that that King's Road train running and they...
Situational, but legit.
Right. Yeah. They shouldn't have too much trouble keeping Urine on the board if they get to that position. And then, you know, at that point, they pretty much weather Valor with punity from an economic standpoint.
Yeah, that's a game changer for sure. But just speaking in generalities.
I think Tommy's right. I mean, I think if a Greyjoy player is forced to Valor in a time in which they don't have the resources to really take advantage of it, it's definitely they need to set up. And I think probably of all the factions, the most predictable is going to be Greyjoy. Like, you will be able to see on the board when your opponent is going to Valor you, and you can be able to play around that.
Regardless of Valor, wouldn't you say that in general, Greyjoy is the most predictable faction of them all in terms of any strategy? When they sit down across from you, you know what they're trying to do.
I think that's true. I definitely think that's true. I think the plot lineup and how you play your plots separates good Greyjoy players from bad Greyjoy players. But I definitely think you're right. When it comes to like, what is this? How is this opponent going to own me? It definitely, if I'm playing against Greyjoy, I'm like, oh, okay, stealth plus boats.
Right. And I couldn't agree more. The plot line is what defines the great Greyjoy players versus the average. But I think it's really hard. You have to actively suck to be bad at playing Greyjoy right now.
That's true.
Wow. Does that really send us on to the eighth and final house that quickly?
Let's hear your roar.
Heyo. Oh. Leonister. This is a fun one. And one that I think I actually go back to being a little conflicted about. I feel like they have some different options, things that fall on both sides of the road. Honestly, the thing that jumps out at me first in regards to impact is that a lot of folks, I think, are going to be highly looking to use Valor against Lannister in order to try to knock out some range of these large, beefy uniques that they use. But Lannister does have the gold economic advantage in the bag pretty hard. So, you know, I'm interested to see a little bit more about how that interplay plays out. I think you'll have to be very careful to try to utilize it against them.
I think in a post-Valor meta, if you're trying to aggressively play Valor against a Lannister opponent, you're going to be playing right into their hands.
I definitely think Will's right that Valor is a answer to Lannister. Like, if the next chapter pack had Valor, like if it was in chapter pack 1 and not chapter pack 4, I think it would really reshape the meta. I think the problem for Valor as a way of sort of pushing Lannister down is that the box will be out by the time, or we coming out shortly after Valor comes out. And I think the fact that we know there's at least two more really good 7-cost bombs coming out creates sort of additional redundancy in the sense that, like, if you lose Tywin to your opponent's Valor, well, you may have Tyrion or you may have Cersei, depending on what your deck is built around, if it's a clansman deck or it's an intrigue deck. Plus you have, you know, Illipane, and you have the Mountain and all these other really good, solid bomb characters that you're able to play even if you've lost to Valor. And, you know, and there's certainly going to be other awesome characters throughout the cost slot that creates redundancy for Lannister in that box, in a similar situation to what we talked about with Stark. And I also think, though, that Lannister's intrigue theme plays into Valor, right? The fact that Lannister, along with Martell, can empty your hand really consistently. Like, as someone who plays against a lot of Lannister in New York and against Aaron all the time, like, Lannister can consistently empty your hand. And this, I think, makes Lanny really well, and the gold advantage that Will also mentioned, makes Lannister really well positioned to use Valor and survive their opponent's Valor.
There's nothing worse than being run into your own Valor as the only plot that you could possibly play to stay in the game and having two cards in hand because they have beaten you down and emptied your hand and Tears of List your best character. And that's what's going to happen with a good Lannister deck in a Valor environment. And the people that look at it and say, hey, Lannister is going to get hit hard because you can't play three Tywins, you can't play three Miris out of house, you can't do these things where you have these high cost characters that are the focal point of your deck that are, if you lose one copy, you're screwed. Well, Lannister has so many potential options and ways to cheat characters into play on a turn when Valor's played either for them or against them, that I think that, again, like I said in my opening statement about it, if you're trying to preemptively Valor in an early state of the game, you're playing into Lannister's hands.
You know, I think another aspect that flows from that as far as the jumping effects go, you know, be that the events or ambush characters, I think another thing worth noting, if you're looking to play it offensively against Lannister, or if you're a Lannister player looking to dodge Valor, that it gives them, I think, a superior ability to kind of pace what they're doing and not have to overcommit and really declare their board presence, or to have a board presence during the challenge phase and then not during the plot phase, and dodge that incoming reset, similarly to how we were talking about Night's Watch being able to do that with the Ravens.
And the Banff deck loves Valor, right? The ability to clear your opponent's board, or at least thin it down significantly, and then cheat a bunch of characters into play is going to be pretty annoying.
It's super annoying.
And then I think one of the things that the box will do that will make, I think, Lannister players really happy and people really angry, I guess, is like, let's think about a deck that's built around Cersei and Tywin, right? So say you get Cersei out one turn, round or two, and you get two or three power on her and you're hitting your opponent's hand. Your opponent's going to want a Valor, right? Particularly if Cersei's not super protected. And then you Valor and you get rid of Cersei, and that's awesome, right? Because this really impactful bomb is gone. And you've taken, you know, a couple power off, you know, taking them from, say, 7 power down to 5 or 4 power. And, you know, their board is largely empty. But then they play trading, or they play noble, or they play something, and then Tywin comes out. That's what Lannister can now do is Lannister can bait their opponent into Valoring at a time in which, yeah, they lose really good stuff, but they have equally good stuff to replace it with, which I think the only faction that can compete with them right now is Stark with that. And that, I think, is people are going to end up. That's going to be the point of setting Facebook on fire, setting Card GameDB on fire, is the fact that the redundancy in Lannister and to a lesser extent Stark is so much higher than the other factions that it makes it harder for you to leverage Valor in a way in which you would want to.
Well, in a realistic scenario like you're talking about, where you're able to have your Cersei that gained a bunch of power get Valored away plus whatever other characters are on the board, it's not inconceivable to say not only the next turn do you dump down a Tywin, but also potentially a Tyrion or a Jaime and a Bronn, and your board is just electric and you can't be stopped. In the same regard, what you're saying about Stark, I think that exists to a lesser extent, and that might end up being something that you see bubbling to the top of fields of people who are competing at who's better at timing their Valors and culminating on their ability to play out their either held back or secondary bomb characters to exploit an opponent's overcommitment pre-Valor.
You know, also kind of piggybacking and going back to what Roy was saying about the kind of depth in the Lannister card pool and the redundancy available to them, and how Stark is probably the other house that kind of gets to that type of level. I find it interesting that it feels in many ways like Stark has only kind of gotten to that point with a box available to them this cycle, while Lannister has done it out of the first cycle. But by the time Valor hits, we're probably going to have the Lannister box as well, which means that breadth only, you know, goes even more so for Lannister. So I think that's going to be quite the boon.
Who's next closest after those two, though?
After those two, probably Raytheon, I think.
Greyjoy, maybe? Because Greyjoy does have a lot of characters that can kind of do what it wants, I guess.
See, I kind of agree with both of those on a fundamental level, but I also feel like maybe one or two more quality Sand Snakes and Martell's there.
Yeah, I think Martell's there too, but I think Martell more has the tools to exploit, maybe because I've been playing a lot of Martell Wolf recently, like Martell has the tools to exploit other factions' good characters plus their own, I guess, in a way that keeps them, I think, in the game more so than sort of like, oh, all of my Martell characters are really great, if that makes any sense. Uh-oh.
Sounds like Targaryen.
So before we move on, gentlemen, I sort of have one thing that I want to ask both of you. Well, not one thing, like eight things. So knowing what we know today, let's go through each faction and say, would you put Valor in your plot deck for that faction?
I think that's a great way to close things.
So why don't we just go back in sort of reverse order?
Some of these have multiple builds. Are you wanting us to just kind of average that out? Or
yeah, qualify? Average that out. I mean, like, if you want to call a specific, like, if you know, want to say, like, there are two really dominant builds that come to your head. But this can also just be personal preference. Like, you know, one or two builds What do you, you know, if, let's start with Lannister. Lannister's the most obvious. If you are playing Lannister, like you are going into a regional that, say, with the cards that we know that are spoiled plus what we have now, you're going to build a Lannister deck for Gen Con or Worlds. Knowing what we know now, would you put Valor in your plot deck for your Lannister deck?
Okay, so for Lannister, I go with a pretty solid yes. I would play Valor in my plot deck.
Yeah, I think regardless of build, I'm playing into my plot deck as well.
Ditto.
Okay, well, we'll just keep working our way backwards then. How about Greyjoy?
I can't imagine a scenario that I don't play it.
I'm going to go even further. I'm going to say once Valor is released, a Greyjoy deck that does not have that card in its plot deck is a bad Greyjoy deck.
I think you very well may be right. I'm playing it in all of my Greyjoy decks. Okay, Tyrell, then. Here's a fun one.
If I'm playing the Arbor, I'm playing Valor. If I'm not playing the Arbor, I'm not playing Valor.
I'm also going to be extreme here. I think, actually, most, even non-Arbor decks, are really going to think hard about including Valor and are going to want them. Like, I think Tyrell is also in this camp of absolute auto-include. It would be the last thing I cut would be Valor from any Tyrell deck that I'm building.
I think Tommy's general breakdown there is a pretty good rule for me as well. I'm looking at it very hard for the Arbor and less so if I'm not. Back it up to Martell.
This one's more difficult for me. I feel like every deck that I build for Martell, I'm going to be doing it with the frame of Valor and wanting to try to find ways to exploit it. I think there's going to be people that build Martell decks that don't use it, but try to exploit their opponent's Valor. But I think that for me personally, I'm going to be trying to make the most out of Valor in tandem with all the other good control that already exists for Martell. So I'll say right now, probably unless something fundamentally changes in the game or for Martell as a faction, it's unlikely that I ever play a Martell deck that does not have Valor in it, as long as it's in rotation.
To be a bit of a devil's advocate, if you're playing like some Harmon Uller, like dump all the Sand Snakes you possibly can for as cheaply as you can deck, I may not play Valor simply because I would be worried that I wouldn't necessarily be able to get the dupes that I wanted into play. Maybe Martell and Melee, or more put this, like in Joust, I think the strongest build for Martell will be Control, and it will definitely be playing Valor. I think in Melee, which this might be the only faction that we mentioned this, I don't think actually Martell will be playing Valor. It will be doing a little bit what Tommy was saying, which is trying to play around its opponent's Valor, but not having it in its plot deck.
You know, this one is where I start to get a little more torn, go figure, as we move back the other direction. But if I had to put a number on it, I think probably 75% of the time, I'm still going to be looking at it out of Martell. How about Night's Watch, though?
Night's Watch is another one for me where unless the fundamental identity changes, the attractiveness of the efficiency is going to tend to draw me to play Valor and their high efficiency cards. So segueing off of what Will did in terms of numbers, I'd probably say 65 to 70% of the time, I'm going to go with a Valor in my Night's Watch. The other times, I'm probably based off of more unique characters.
I'm actually going to disagree here because I actually think that the strongest Night's Watch build is going to be a Hyper Varus deck that's like running double marched and is just trying to clear its board using the Night Gatherers to just really, really annoy its opponent. So I'm going to say most Night's Watch decks are not going to be running Valor, but they're going to be in a position to survive their opponent's Valor really well.
You know, I feel like while I definitely agree that I like discarding as a route in general for Night's Watch, the way it plays into some things, notably Yoren, Valor, I still like for some of Night's Watch. It's probably going to be 50-50 for me based on largely on whether I'm running the wall, I think, is going to be my turning point. Backing on up to Stark.
Stark is another one equally challenging, but I think whether you're playing one of the power grab builds or one of the more traditional Stark builds, that's going to be the determining factor. And I think we might be still too early in the game, especially with as many cards as you have access to. it's a toss up whether you're going to go Tully Rush or you're going to go traditional kill. And we haven't been able to see the new King Robin play. So this one for me is probably as close to a 50-50 as I'm going to get.
I think I will agree with Tommy, because I think the King Rob build is going to want Valor. But I think a more tempo-oriented Stark that wants to sort of, that's more along the lines of where Stark is being built right now, that wants to go wide but deep, is not going to be running Valor. It's going to try to position itself to try to survive its opponent's Valor or survive its opponent's reset, whatever its reset is, be it First Snow or Wildfire, and then continue to apply pressure and survive your opponent's tricks with Winterfell. So I think it's 50-50 here. I definitely think there's going to be, I do think Valor is going to create a new build alongside Rob of Stark Hyperkill, but I think it's definitely, I think of all the factions right now, it's the most clear 50-50, where you would need to be able to see a couple of turns what they're doing when you're playing against Stark versus sort of any other faction right now that we've talked about. I think it's going to be pretty clear once you sit down from across them, oh, they're going to have Valor.
I think I'm also probably in the 50-50 camp on Stark. Things get a bit more nebulous, I hope, as we move further down the line, though. Unfortunately, I'm forgetting, let's see, was it Targaryen that we had done for this?
Yeah, it's Targ.
There we go. What do you guys think there? How much are you running it?
Man, I have so much 1.0 bias when it comes to Targ that tells me I want to play it. But I also have a lot of 2.0 bias against events, which makes me want to not play it. So I think at the end of the day, it's going to again come down to an archetype decision. If I'm playing Smash Brothers, I'm playing Valor. If I'm playing Danny, I'm not.
I'm going to be a little harder than Tommy here. I think unless Burn gets some awesome new cards in the cycle, that no, I don't think most Targ decks are going to be running Valor. I think they are going to try to figure out a way to survive Valor, and they're going to try to use some Targ tricks. But I think as a general rule, no. They're not going to want Valor. They're going to want to come up with a way to survive it, and they're maybe be the least effective faction to survive it of any that are currently that are available to us. So I'm going to say it's like 25% of Targ decks are going to be running them.
This is one where it's maybe less an archetype and more a character-based thing. I think I am looking at skipping it if my game plan revolves around Danny and thus the hatchlings. But otherwise, I think I am willing to play it. Okay, and then on to Baratheon, right?
This one for me, surprisingly, given that it's the last one that we're working our way back to, I can't help it. Sorry, new 2.0 listeners. But with my 1.0 bias, if I'm playing Baratheon, which I likely will never do, but I understand the way that I would want to play it, I'm definitely including Valor, and I'm probably including another reset on top of it.
I'm just going to be contrarian and say no. I think it's going to change. It's not actually going to change Baradex that much, I think. I think Bera is the faction that has a really clear game plan. It benefits in some ways from Valor, but it still wants to do the same old Bera stuff, which is protect its good guys, kneel shit, win dominance. And I think there will be Baradex around Valor, but I definitely think it doesn't need it. And it's going to be it's going to be one of those things. You're going to sit down across from a Bera player and they're going to Valor you. And you're going to be like, oh, I did not expect you to be running that plot.
I got to side kind of with Tommy here again. I think I'm surprising myself with the kind of where we had placed these for discussion. But the more I think about it, the more I feel like I probably do want it, since Baratheon largely feels so much like the traditional Lannister control that I played for so much first edition. And Valor wound up being a very, very big fit for that deck. So I think I'm going to play it more often than not in Baratheon. I'm going to put it in the 60s.
All right. Well, folks, what are your opinions? We'd love to hear both in the comments on Card Game AB or on the White Book website about what you guys think. Like, do you agree with us about both the assessment of how Valor impacts the factions or how often you'll see them in plot decks? I'm sure James will have very strong opinions about how wrong we are, except maybe that Tyrell's really going to benefit. So I'm really looking forward to what people's opinions are.
Yeah. Tell us why we're right and you're going to build the same kind of decks that we're talking about, or tell us how stupid we are and that we are never going to win another game.
And I just want to throw out there, we also accept Facebook comments, and I hear Google Plus is a thing. I don't know, but...
Will, you're getting a little robot-y.
It's because he tried to make fun of Google Plus, and we're recording on Google Hangouts.
Google is watching you.
They're
I know. Me.
I think that means it's probably high time to move to props and slops.
Woo!
Yeah, gosh. Has everybody seen Game of Thrones this last week?
Yeah.
Who's that first? Roy?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
All right.
Every Sunday,
spoiler.
Man.
Okay. Spoiler alert for the listeners, then. For the next minute or two, we're gonna be talking about the HBO show. How did this feel for a penultimate episode to you guys? Personally, I would have to say I liked it. I really dug some of the beats. I felt that little swell of anticipation and pride when the Knights of the Vale turned up. I felt sad for 1-1. But I do feel like overall this was one of the weaker penultimate episodes so far.
It was up and down. I liked seeing Tyrion get to be Tyrion at his best again. Him having little quips as an advisor and doing some of his at court time type of little diatribes is great. I love him in that role. I love that they keep teasing Daenerys as being a little bit of a mad queen type character. Who's just being held on by a thread, be it, you know, Miss Andy or Tyrion, whoever. And as much as I hate Asha being Yara, I thought that exchange between those two characters was pretty entertaining. And lastly, I love the look on Sansa's face as she rides away at the end of the episode. Or walks away, I should say, not rides away. But it was just very interesting to see her with a face of gratification.
You know, it was okay, but that was something that I just didn't... It was one of the scenes that I felt kind of let down by. I didn't feel that poetic, epic punch I wanted. Like, when he lets Rickon go and he's running away, I expected him to let the hounds out to chase him then, right? And then you see a dire wolf rush out, I'm assuming Ghost, though. I haven't seen him in so long, I can't remember. Is he still alive on the show, or did they kill Ghost off?
He is still alive. He is still alive on the show.
Yeah, have Ghost, run out and just rip the hounds to shreds. I think that would have had that symbolic, push, oh, the Starks are back to Winterfell, you know? And, I don't know, it just hit her leaving him to the hounds didn't have the punch I wanted.
Yeah, I'm a little bit, I am of mixed feelings about the episode. There's many things that I sort of, I am on, team, by the end of the first episode of the season, I was fucking sick of Ramsay and just wanted him to die. And just was just tired of the character. I was just done with everything they could possibly do with Ramsay. And I was just very glad that this was the send-off episode for him. And I am closer to Tommy of saying, the scene between him and Sansa with the dogs was a pretty good end to the sort of their relationship, for lack of a better term. But at the end of the day, I did end up not really feeling all that satisfied. I think the more I've thought about the episode, the less I've liked it. I think the battle itself was really beautiful. I think it was really well shot. I think the more you think about the battle, the dumber it gets.
Logical sense.
Like the fact that the bodies got piled up like that is just like has no relation to sort of what was going on actually in the battle, like before those scenes where the bodies were piled up. And
it was a wide field. How the hell do they all end up being in this one 10x10 area? And how do they end up getting a phalanx surrounding these people in an open field?
Yeah, right. I agree. No, like it was spectacle over logic, and the same with like Sansa not telling Jon about the veil. Like it felt very like maybe we'll get some plot follow up about that later.
And that's the one thing that I think is consistent with Sansa's character, though, is that she feels like she was, you know, insecure about her decision to do it, and she was unsure whether he was going to show up. So maybe she was too like embarrassed to tell him that she did it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think of all of the quibbles I had about the episode, I think that one will probably be the one that pays off in the next one based on the trailer.
Absolutely.
But we'll see. I actually kind of liked the Dany stuff in the sense that it was very like to the point, I guess, in the way in which the Stark stuff wasn't, even though I'm much more emotionally invested in the Stark stuff than I am in the Dany stuff. So I don't know. I came away with it. I didn't hate the episode, and I have actually actively hated a few of the episodes this season. But it definitely was. It was a bit of a letdown because I was definitely the most looking forward to, because Jon is one of my favorite characters. Sansa is one of my favorite characters. Ramsay is my least favorite character on the show, I think, at this point. Like, he's actively a character that makes me want to turn the show off when he was on screen. So I don't know. I'm of several minds about it.
The one thing I want to add about the conversation with Sansa and Ramsay is that I think that it does something for the, not only the culmination of the relationship, but also the perception of the characters involved, right? Sansa has the foresight to say, after Ramsay makes the comment of them being his loyal beasts that would never harm him, and then she saying, well, you starved them. It's almost like her, it's a culmination comment of all the shit that she's been through and saying, hey, I'm the starved dog. I know how they feel, and everybody's about to get the wrath.
That's a pretty good interpretation.
Now, I mean, I can't possibly say that that's for sure what they were going for, but I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Because otherwise, it kind of sucked.
Yeah, no, I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt on that as well. Like, I got the idea of what they were going for. I'm just not sure that like the symbolic feel there was as high as other routes they could have gone. So we'll see.
That we will.
I guess. Although I will actually specify that was supposed to be a slop.
It's true.
For me, so
it was also somewhat of a slop for me as well.
It was a for sloppy.
I don't know, Will. Would you say though that considering how robot-y your voice is, at least on my connection, that we are approaching the danger zone of this episode?
I believe we are. Thus closes another chapter of the White Book.
With the robot apocalypse.
Won't play the music.